For book publishers at holiday time, mailboxes just keep filling up. Not with festive season's greetings, but with attorney's bills. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. In various courtrooms around Manhattan this week, rulings from the bench approved class action settlements in the Apple ebook price-fixing case, dismissed a quizzical suit over online ebook sales, and gently diffused arguments from a perennial objector. Joining me from New York with all the legal lowdown is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer. And Andrew, welcome back. As we welcome you back every week to Beyond the Book.
Greetings, Chris.
So in the first of the cases we're going to talk about today, Andrew, we're back to the Apple ebook price-fixing case. And what went on in Judge Coates' courtroom?
Well, that's right. You remember last week we talked about the upcoming hearing, and as promised, Judge Coates did approve the final two class action settlements with Penguin and Macmillan, and she cleared the way for more than $166 million in long-awaited consumer refunds to begin flowing right to consumer accounts. So next week on the Publishers Weekly site, I'm going to have a follow-up about where that all exactly stands. I'm going to talk with some people at Rust Consulting, and you can find out exactly when to expect your refund to hit your ebook account. You know, but as I reported after the hearing last week, the refunds unfortunately will not be hitting your account before Christmas. They are going to hit in early 2014, however, and that should give publishers a nice little first quarter bump in revenues, even though they would probably like to have that in their fourth quarter holiday sales. And the reason why that is because, as Texas State Attorney Rebecca Fisher explained to me after the hearing, it's going to take 30 days from the December 6th judgment date before the judgment actually takes effect. And then after that, it can take anywhere from 2 weeks or more for retailers to disperse their funds after that. So likely in January, you can expect a belated holiday gift from your attorney general in your consumer ebook account. And next week, I'll have a report with more details, including whether or not the final payment amounts might be adjusted upwards.
All right. Well, you can have that to look forward to. Certainly look forward to your reporting, but also extra change dropping into our ebook accounts. But last week we also talked about some potential fireworks with an objector in that case, Bob Cohn. He was slated to speak and did in fact appear before the judge. What happened there, and is that story over?
Yeah, so no fireworks, as you know, I thought there might be in this case. In fact, Judge Coates was exceedingly polite and thankful for Bob Cohn's argument. And she spent over an hour with him, really going over everything quite thoroughly. Now, if you ask Mr. Cohn, she was just sort of doing this for show, that she was just trying to make it look like she covered all her bases. But it seemed to me in watching this that she literally was very interested in the arguments that he had to make and how they might fit in to what she was going to rule. So I have a much more thorough account of this all on the PW website. It's available right now. But here's the long story there made short. She did not deal Bob Cohn a fatal blow from the bench, but she did put a lot of legal hurdles in his way going forward. He can continue to file briefs if he wants to, but really, he's sort of all alone out there on a limb now. You know, look at it this way. The publishers, you know, surely love his argument that their collusive behavior was, in fact, legal because it was done in response to Amazon's predatory pricing, but really, they just want this to be over. So they're not about to appeal their own deals, right? Consumers, they want their $3 refunds per ebook, and most of them really don't understand what's going on here anyway, so they just want their credits. Apple, they're not fans of Bob Cohn's argument because Bob doesn't deny that there was any collusion here that ultimately raised prices. You know, Apple does deny that. In fact, Apple argues that ebook prices actually went down after Apple's entry into the ebook business. And in court on last Friday, Bob Cohn told the judge that was crap. And that remark was perhaps a little too colorful for the court because she pretty abruptly ended the hearing with Bob after he made that remark. But I will say this for Bob. He has made one very good point throughout, and that is if he is not allowed to appeal whether or not these settlements are good for consumers, there's going to be no appeal scrutiny here at all. The publishers, obviously, as I said, are not going to appeal their own deals. Apple can't appeal because they're not party to these deals, and no consumer groups came forward. So I'm not sure that it matters in the long run, but sometimes it is comforting to know that there is an appeal process that has vetted, you know, big consumer deals like this. And if Bob's not allowed to at least throw his hat in the ring and appeal, we're not going to have that with these settlements.
Well, you know, I have to smile, Andrew, because only a legal hound like yourself would really want an appeal. But I see your point. And an appeal does kind of vet the whole thing and give everybody a second look at it. But also in Manhattan, another judge this week, Judge Jed Rakoff, tossed a suit brought by booksellers. This is a strange one, alleging a conspiracy involving Big Six publishers, then Big Six, now Big Five, and Amazon over Kindle's DRM. Sort that out and tell us what could happen next.
Yeah, you're right. This one has always been a real head scratcher for me. And as you said, on the same day, on December 6th, the same day that Judge Coate was approving the final publisher settlements, Judge Rakoff dismissed this suit, which was filed by three independent booksellers against Amazon and the Big Six publishers. And as you say, it alleged that they engaged in some murky conspiracy to keep rivals from selling ebooks on the Kindle by using Amazon's proprietary Mobi platform and using DRM to keep people out. You know, like I said, this has always been a very puzzling suit to me. And in the end, the case had not one shred of supporting evidence and really no plausible motive. Indeed, you know, at the same time publishers were settling charges for their conspiracy against Amazon, the booksellers were with a straight face alleging that publishers were actually conspiring with Amazon. And their proof? Well, the only thing that I can see that they had and the only thing that Judge Rakoff saw was that the contracts had clauses mandating DRM. That's it. But Rakoff easily dispatched the suit, noting that, you know, publishers customarily insist on DRM to prevent illegal copying. And the idea that they'd want to limit, you know, use DRM to limit their retail options to Amazon's platform was simply not plausible. You know, indeed, publishers want to sell their ebooks as widely as possible in theory, right? So he had no problem dispatching the suit on those grounds. So in a word, I'm going to say the suit was really pretty dumb. And I'd say frivolous too, because there really was no supporting evidence to move forward with this. But you know, at the risk of, you know, sounding like here I go again with my legal hound stuff, I do think this suit kind of served a purpose. And for me, it was another illustration and sort of another way to call attention to the bad things that can happen when you decide to punish your paying customers by using DRM. So we'll see where this all goes next. One of the booksellers told PW that they were incredibly considering an appeal. I doubt very much they're going to appeal this dismissal, but stay tuned.
Stay tuned indeed. It's a great country. You could sue a ham sandwich if you want to. And if you're a bookseller, you can sue Amazon just because you feel bad about what they do. Finally, we had a research report this week from the Pew Research Center's Internet Project, and they were looking at the state of libraries in this country. And the message from their surveys is rather mixed. People seem to love their libraries, but they're not so sure about the role they should play. Tell us.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that is up on the PW website now. You can read all about that report. And next week, we'll have some of our great library bloggers chiming in on what the report means for them. So, you know, not to steal the thunder from the Pew report, which I hope you'll go and check out, I'll say this. The number of library visits, whether in person or via the website, has declined about 5% over 2012. Now, that's not a surprise because, you know, you can get information in a lot of places now. And indeed, one of the takeaways from the Pew survey was that 52% of those surveys said they don't feel libraries are as necessary as they used to be. And that's obviously true because you can get a lot of quick information right there on your iPhone now. You don't need to use libraries like you used to. But, you know, that's the bad news in the report. The good news is that Americans still love their libraries. You know, there was an overwhelming majority felt that libraries still perform essential services, and they'd be very sad if they were to, if their neighborhood branch was to close. So there's a lot to work there, but at best, it's a mixed message because, you know, the more that we see these, you know, visits tumble to libraries, the harder it becomes to sustain library services. So I think libraries really need to sort of dig in and find out what their consumers really want, what they need to be providing in terms of services, and how to translate those warm and fuzzy feelings Americans have for libraries into visits and into circulation and into action. So as the ALA midwinter meeting kicks off in January, we'll keep an eye on how librarians are responding to this latest Pew report.
Right. Well, it's a real challenge for them, I would imagine. I know in your report for PW, you reported on Brian Kenny, who's a PW columnist and director of the White Plains New York Public Library. He was reassured that younger people are, attached to their libraries in the numbers that they are. He was surprised by that. I guess people usually rediscover libraries when they have kids of their own. But he was also talking about the challenge in technology. And I think the other challenge is the challenge of what kind of service does a library provide. It used to be pretty simple and straightforward. Reference and books for lending. Now it's a lot more than that.
That's right. And, you know, and it's really not a critique of the data in the Pew survey, which is excellent as a perception study, something Brian noted. But one thing it doesn't do is it doesn't answer questions for us. You know, we know how people feel about their libraries, and we know but we don't know exactly what they want. We certainly don't know what they're using now. We don't, and in terms of technology, you know, of the 34% of library users in the survey who thought libraries were not keeping up technology, well, why is that? What exactly are we not giving them in libraries? So they not getting good reference service? Are they not having available hardware? So, you know, what can we do better to engage those people who feel libraries are not keeping up technologically? I mean, I feel that's probably one of the key questions going forward as we move further into this digital reading age.
Well, I think the perception out there in the public is that almost no service, and particularly no government service, is keeping up with technology. And it just may be that libraries got caught up in that. We appreciate your reporting, as always, Andrew Albany, Senior Writer for Publishers Weekly. Thanks so much for joining us this week on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, BeyondTheBook.com. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.